Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Ingrid Acevedo was 11 years old when she hid in the rubble of a bombed and ruined Berlin. She was hiding from the soldiers of the Soviet Army after the fall of the Third Reich. She's written a book. It's called Out of the Rubble, about her experiences during the war, her gratitude for the American military, and her thoughts on the American political climate today. The author will be speaking to the Black Hills Veterans Writing Group this Saturday at Ellsworth Air Force Base's South Dakota Air and Space Museum. We reached Ingrid in Elk Grove, California. But first, here's a note from me to you. Ingrid's story is a challenging one. The interview is suitable for radio, but not necessarily easy to hear at times. Please use your own discretion as you decide whether or not to listen.
You know, the problem is, in America, I have made it a habit here lately, and I'm 82, and I was 5.5 years old when the war started. And I'm a very proud American. And I ask people at different ages, I said, talk to me about the Constitution of the United States. Talk to me about the Second World War. Talk to me about the Berlin Airlift and how these men saved 2.5 million people from starving. And these kids stand there with a look on their face like, I never heard of it. And I don't know if some of us that lived through those difficult times think we are the last eyewitnesses, and maybe it's time we wake up America and let it realize what we really stand for: freedom and liberty for the whole world. But everybody is so busy trying to carve out a living, you know, it's difficult.
Let's go back, because this book just came out in 2015. So for a long time, you hadn't told your story as well. What made you to kind of decide to start writing your memoir?
Well, I have spoken at schools. I have spoken when I was involved in politics. They always want to know about your past because they're curious. But I, to be very honest, and I might put myself in the electric frying pan here, I have seen things happening in America that reminded me of some of the things that happened when I was a child growing up in World War II. And some of the restrictions, some of the we want to make changes to the Constitution. Why? Our forefathers were the wisest men to sit down and protect us with that Constitution. So, and then I see what is happening in our presidential race this year. And I'm saying to myself, my gosh, America, wake up. You are so fortunate, but you've got to take part in it. We weren't allowed to take part in it. Under Hitler, we were not allowed to take part. If you spoke up against the government, you and most probably your family would just disappear.
Tell me a little bit about, let's go back to your childhood, and tell me the first time that you heard of Hitler. You were pretty young. How did things change when you started hearing that name?
Well, I had a very bad experience. My mother had a very bad experience. They liked to have a lot of large assemblies for him because he was new. Hindenburg had just died, and he became the replacement for Hindenburg, and he became Führer and Chancellor all at the same time. And he was trying to get the people of Germany to back him and to cheer for him, and he wanted to take total control. So we went to one of those assemblies that you more or less had to go to, because if people found out you didn't go, eventually somebody would turn you in, and then you kind of got into trouble. So we went, and there were a lot of people. And all I can remember, I mean, I was 5.5 years old. You know, I was a pretty sharp one because I started reading and I was 5.5 and 6. He started screaming and yelling, and I started crying very loud. It scared me so much. And that was my first experience with Hitler. And then the Gestapo, well, they weren't the Gestapo just that at that time yet, because he was just starting out. They asked us, would my mother please leave, because I was being a disturbance. And I was shaken. He scared the heck out of me. And that was my first experience with Hitler. And then, of course, you know, the book explains pretty much how things started happening pretty fast. And, you know, the 10 samples that I list in my talks, I can see them happening in America now. And so we had to be very, very careful. We were told never to talk out loud about the Führer. We were told not to talk to Jewish people. And we lived in a very heavy Jewish neighborhood, so for me it was unavoidable. And then, of course, they started with the bombing, and then, you know, you knew that something was really wrong with the world. And we were torn away from our family, basically. The men were in the war, and mothers would take care of the whole country because they had to make ammunition and work in heavy-duty factories. And so life wasn't as nice as it used to be. And I spent a lot of time with my grandparents because they were kind and they were living the old style of the German life. And where they were in the country outside of Berlin, it was still pretty quiet, even during the bombing raids. You know, it was quiet.
Tell me a little bit about those bombing raids, because I remember a portion in the book you talk about taking your dog, and tell me a little bit about a night bombing raid in your home when you were small.
Okay. My mother was involved with different groups in the community. Of course, at that time, I did not know that they were making provisions for people that were leaving the country overnight. So I spent most evenings by myself at home. And I was very young, and we didn't have babysitters. But she didn't want me to stay in the house by myself, so she wanted me to go down to the building at the end of the street. And city blocks in Berlin are pretty big. Mm-hmm. So I would go to the bunker, as they called it, and I had to carry two little suitcases. One had pictures and papers, and the other one had jewelry, you know. And I always had to turn off the electric switch for the whole house because they didn't want the electricity to come on if somebody got killed, you know, on the way, because it would make a target. So anyway, I would say to Heidi, you wait for me, we'll go together. But I had to put on that ugly gas mask and the helmet. And by the time I turned around to look for the dog and grabbed my little suitcases, she was gone. So I turned off the switch and I locked the house, and I ran like mad to get to the bunker in time, because if you didn't get there on time, they wouldn't let you in. It was pretty scary, and putting on just, you know, if you've never put on a gas mask and a helmet and ran with it, you can't imagine how scary that is.
Especially for a child.
And the old ones were pretty stinky, you know. Uh-huh. Now they have plastic and they wouldn't be as bad. And that's when we would sit down there and wait until the all clear, alarm would ring, and then we could go back to our houses. And of course, you weren't really allowed to go back into your house if there was fire nearby, because they didn't know if there would be a gas leak or something.
Now, you said one of the most difficult things about the war was not being able to tell the truth. As a child, you had been told not to lie, and there were many, many secrets. Talk about some of the secrets your family was keeping during this time.
My family would talk about politics. My family would talk about what was happening, but I was not supposed to listen, because they were afraid that I would go and speak to my friends or speak to other people. And they watched people. I mean, you can't imagine what it's like to live in a police state. Hmm. And so we weren't allowed to listen to the adults. And my mother always threatened me. She says, if you say, hear anybody say anything, she says, and you repeat it, and it's something that worries you, she says, then you will be punished. And I got punished a couple of times. And my mother would sit under the thick, heavy blanket in the basement and listen to the newscast that would come in from England in German. And they would warn us where we would be bombed, and they would warn us that we would be bombed. And so those were scary things. And we weren't, the teachers would never answer us any questions. We would ask the teacher, why is there a war? Why are these people disappearing? Why are these people wearing yellow stars? Why are their houses not, you know, I, in my own heart, and I know I should probably not say that, but I think a lot of the bombed out huge houses in my neighborhood were friendly fire, because they just didn't want those houses to be standing. And I think they had a perfect cover with the bombing.
Tell me when you first heard that Adolf Hitler had died or had killed himself. Where were you during that time, and how old were you?
Well, we were at the time that we found out that he had killed himself. We were still in the bunker. Mm-hmm. But you know what upset me more? Because at this time, I had learned to hate him too, because by then we had gone through hell and high water. What I could not understand was that Mrs. Goebbels would kill her six children.
Mm-hmm. That was sort
it
of...
poisoned them, yeah. Yes.
Part of how the Nazis...
And then she and her husband would go and commit suicide. Hmm. That, to me, I could never get over that. How can a mother and a father want to kill their children?
And then did you have a moment of hope then that it was over? This is before the Soviet army arrives. Was there a moment where you thought this is...
Oh, Lord,
no. You were ready for it to get worse.
You cannot imagine what the streets were like. There was still continuous fires. There was no electricity. There was no water. There was no food. Hmm. There were dead animals. People would cut flesh out of the dead animals to have something to eat. And then when the Russians came in, you see, I have a newspaper of 1945 in my treasure chest, and it said that the Mongols were already standing outside of the walls of Berlin waiting to get their restitution. Hmm. And restitution meant that they had a free for all. They could have whatever they wanted, but what they wanted most of all were women. And I'm talking women from 8 to 80.
So, Ingrid, I want to stop you right there, because in the book, and this is a question I want to ask you, in the book there are some graphic and sort of gruesome stories. How did you decide what to put in the book and what to leave out? Did you leave anything out, or did
Yes.
How did you make that decision?
I think I wrote it very clearly in my introduction that I could have written 10 other stories, but I had to, you know, children will read this stuff. I wanted to be an educational book, but if I would have written some of the things that I saw and smelled, I had to go on medication when I first started writing this book, because I just brought it all back up, you know. And the screaming, and my best friends that weren't as lucky as I, Mom and I, we spent a couple or 3 weeks under the bombed out house. But a lot of people didn't get that lucky.
When is the first time that you felt hope that somehow there was going to be some healing? When was the first time that you started being able to?
The very first time that I thought there was going to be hope for healing, when I heard my mom and my future dad talking in the kitchen, and they said they are done with the Potsdam Conference, and we are going to be in the American sector.
Ingrid Acevedo and I talked for another 15 minutes or so. I asked her about coming to America and how she found healing after painful and traumatic wartime experiences. If you'd like to listen to the full unedited interview, we'll post it online after today's Dakota Midday. Just go to sdpb.org/Dakota Midday, and that is where you can find all of our archived interviews. Ingrid Acevedo is coming to South Dakota. She will visit the Black Hills Veterans Writing Group this Saturday at Ellsworth Air Force Base at the South Dakota Air and Space Museum there. Social hour begins at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. The rest of the program runs until 11:30. The book is called Out of the Rubble.